Yechodesh. Last week we discussed a little bit the Langer case of 1972-1973, and we noted the strong opposition from many halachic circles to that ruling, which was not simply a function of the particulars of the case, which are very limited in scope, but the concern for what it meant for Pesach in general, and perhaps the notion that there is a certain trend towards trying to find a halachic solution for every problem, even where halachic solutions aren't warranted. In some respects, a psak issued by the Beit Din Rabbani in Tzfat of last year had a similar reaction. The psak that we'll talk about was widely criticized by major halachic authorities of our time, perhaps for similar reasons. When I submitted this topic a few weeks ago on the list of shiurim that we'd be talking about, I was unaware, or not expecting, to receive last week a copy of the latest tradition, which included Rabbi Bleich's new 80-page article on the subject. Baruch Hashem, I had a little bit of time to read it, so some of what we'll discuss will hopefully be informed by some of his very astute insights into the sugya. The topic of this Tzfat Get deals with the following situation. A very sad story. A woman in her mid-30s who had been married in 2002, B'chup of the Kiddushin in Eretz Yisrael, living a happy marriage for 5 years, and then suddenly in 2007, her husband was involved in some kind of vehicular accident and was left in a comatose vegetative state. What they seem to represent is a permanent vegetative state, one in which the medical conventional wisdom is that he would have no hope of recovery, but could stay in that state for many years, not being able to communicate in any way, shape, or form. Rabbi Bleich notes in his analysis that there are, for those sensitive to these things, contrary indications in the language of the psak as to whether they're talking about someone in a permanent vegetative state or someone in what he refers to as a locked-in syndrome, the difference being, apparently, that in the latter situation, a person may be aware of his surroundings, just unable to communicate, whereas in the former, he is totally unaware of his surroundings as well, and that may be relevant, that distinction, to the issues that are raised in this psak. So basically, this 93-page psak, which is 93 pages because the style now in Eretz Yisrael, and especially the Bate Din Rabbanim, among many of the Dayanim, is to just write and write and write and cite. So if you have a 93-page plaque, half of it are just long quotations from previous Svarim, even more than half. So it's not 93 pages of original material, but nevertheless 93 pages, authored primarily by Rabbi Uriah Levi, an Av Bez in the Beit Din Utsvat, who previously had written two very thick volumes of Tshuvas, and was a good writer. So what this psak endeavors to do is to find a way to allow this wife to remarry, notwithstanding the fact that the husband is a halachic shota, and we know there are many beferish and mishnayis, gemaras, that indicate that a shota is incapable of executing a get, all the more so here where the husband is totally incapable of communicating anything. Nevertheless, the attempt here was to find a way that this husband, or a get, could be executed on behalf of the husband in order to allow the wife in this unfortunate situation to remarry. Now, the claim in the psak is that it was endorsed by Rav Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg. Subsequent to the issuance of the psak, Rav Zalman Nechemiah signed on to a statement indicating that while he had discussed the matter with the dayanim in question, he did not endorse the psak lamaisa, and any conversations were lahalacha of lo lamaisa. There were also responses printed and circulated by Rabbi Avraham Farbstein, Rosh Hashim and Chevron, where the Dayanim apparently had learned, and by Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, the current Sephardi chief rabbi. So the basic approach of this psak of the Beis Din is two-pronged. Number one, they argue, and we'll have to flesh this out, that according to some, one can invoke the principle of Adaita the Hachi Lo Niskacha, that a woman would never have entered into a marriage knowing that after 5 years her husband would be left in a permanent vegetative state. And therefore, according to that position, there's never a marriage. There's no halachically valid kedushin. And even though the majority of poskim would argue on that analysis, because there is such an opinion, that would render her at least a suffocatious ish. And if she's a suffocatious ish, so then we can go to step two, which is the argument that in this situation you could be mizaka get on behalf of the husband, that you could authorize the writing of a get on his behalf with the assumption that writing a get is an absolute schus, an absolute merit for the husband, and zachin la'adam shelo b'fano. So we'll have to analyze these two points separately. In Rabbi Bleich's analysis, he outlines 9 distinct assumptions that the psak makes, all of which are necessary for the psak to be valid. We're not going to go through his list of 9, but we'll focus on the main points and some of the derivatives. So as far as the first notion here of invoking a daita d'hachi lo niskacha, so this comes from a Gemara in Bava Kamma, source 1 of your sheets. The Gemara in Bava Kamma on Kuf Yud Amud Beis has a number of halachic situations where we have a notion of a daita d'hachi, that a person wouldn't have done something or didn't intend for a certain consequence, and therefore that action is invalid. And the Gemara in that context raises the following question, El Amiyata, maybe you should say, Yevama Shenafel if Nei Mukashkin, Tepik Below Chalitza. That if a Yevama, who's happily married, was happily married to her husband dies, they have no children, so now she is has a Zika to a brother of the deceased husband, who is a Mukashkin, who is a repugnant person, who she clearly wouldn't want to marry. So in that case, maybe a chalitza is unnecessary. Because she never would have entered into a marriage relationship had she known that she would be nofeles liyabam, who's a mukas shchin. So Gemara says, no, you can't say that. In this kind of a situation, we assume, we have an anansadi, that a woman would be happy to marry anyone, b'kol dehu, kiresh lakish, damresh lakish, tavla mesav tandu, mele mesav armel. A person would rather be married to a lowlife, to someone who is not the most quality husband, rather than to remain single. Rashi here explains, demeinach nichala, liskayish lirishon shehu sholem, al safek zeshem yamas tizaki lachiv. So a woman would still rather marry the husband, who is a nice guy, and take the chances that maybe down the road something's going to happen and she'll be nofeles liyabam. So the kol dehu over here, according to Rashi, is going on the husband. The nichal, that she'd rather marry the kol dehu, namely this husband, even though there's a possibility in the back of her mind that maybe at some point she'll be nizakek liyabam. But the mukashin isn't even a kol dehu. So maybe mukashkin, you never agree to marry under any circumstances. We'll see in a minute. According to the Maharam and other Rishonim, it's possible that the kol dehu is going on the mukashkin. Even a mukashkin is considered a kol dehu, that a woman would even agree to be married under certain circumstances to a mukashkin. Okay, now there's a machlokas gaonim, machlokas Rishonim that is slightly derived from this Gemara. If you look in source 4 over here, this is source 5 rather, quoted in the Mordechai and Yevamis, Simon Kaftas and Simon Lamed, there's a famous position of the Gaonim that there's no necessity for Yibam for an Ach Mummer. That if a person's husband dies, they have no children, there's a living brother of the deceased husband, which would create a Zika Liyibam, but that brother is a Mummer, he's an apostate. So the Shitas HaGaonim is that there's no need for Chalitza or Yibam under those circumstances. So the Mordechai requests the Shitas HaGaonim. He says he doesn't understand why that should be. And he quotes Rashi that argues, Rashi says, no, that Yisrael Afabi Shachata Yisrael Hu, that even if he's a Mummer, he's still a Jew. And if he's a Jew, there's a proper Zika, and there's a necessity for Yibam or Chalitza. But the Maram argues, maybe the Shitas HaGaonim is based on the following assumption, that a mummer is really less than a kol dehu. We say that a woman's willing to marry a kol dehu rather than to stay single, tal mesav tandu, but that doesn't apply under every circumstance. Sometimes someone could be less than a kol dehu. So this mummer is going to cause her, if she ends up marrying him, he's going to cause her to violate averos, she'll be averos al das, and therefore a person would never enter into such a relationship knowingly. So maybe that's the assumption of the Shita Sagaonim, that a person would never enter that kind of situation. There, we would say something akin to a daita d'hachi lo niskacha. So we'll come back to this point of Ach Mummer in a couple of moments. It'll be relevant to the argument that's built up by the Beis Din in Tzfat. So the Beis Din makes the following argument based on this Hakdama. Tosos in both that Gemara in Bava Kamma, which is source 3 over here, and Tosos in Ksubis Memzayin Mebeis Source 4 asks the following question. How could the Gemara ever entertain a notion of a daita d'achal and a skacha, that there are certain circumstances in which a woman maybe would never have entered into a marriage knowing the eventual outcome which would be so unfavorable to her? Why is that different than any business transaction? I'll say by the same token that if I buy a piece of merchandise then it goes down in value, I never would have entered into that transaction. I never would have bought that piece of merchandise had I known that it would go down in value. So you can nullify every sale based on that kind of a consideration. So Tosus, obviously that can't be. So Tosus in Ksubis Mem Zayin distinguishes on the following lines. If you look in the citation over here, it's about two-thirds of the way down. When it comes to Mekach and Memkar, it takes two to tango. You need both the input and the buy-in of the Kona and of the Mocher. So you can't argue, if there are two people involved here, so you can't argue that one of them can say later, had I known, because the other one wouldn't have gone along with that kind of a deal. So there are two people, you need both of their input. However, when it comes to the case of Yibam, Tosus writes, Mishin Dibidida Tuluyina Kedushin, that this analysis of Adaita Dachi Lo Neskachi, where the husband is already deceased, doesn't need to involve the husband. Shabar Lo Neshehu Lo Ya'ake Bishvil Shem Dover She'ira Achar Misaso Ke'ena Choshish B'Mesh She'ira Achra. The husband, once he's dead, doesn't really care what's going on anymore, so you can't say that he has a counterbalancing consideration to the woman's Adaita Dachi Lo Neskachi because he's dead. Once he's dead, he has no day anymore. So then the only person we look at is a woman, and from the woman's perspective, we could theoretically argue that a daita d'hachi lo niskacha. So the Tzfat Bezin argues the same could be true for a husband who's in a permanent vegetative state. He has no stake in this marriage anymore. He's totally out of commission. He doesn't have a daya. So it's no different than if he would have been dead. If he would have been dead, he has no daya. Now that he's in a permanent vegetative state, he has no daya either. And therefore, we can assume that he's not going to object to a bittul kedushin, and you can evoke this notion of a daita d'hachi lo niskacha. Then they quote a tshuva Ritzvi Pesach Frank. Ritzvi Pesach Frank, Tshuvas Har Tzvi, Evan Ezer, Simon, Kuf, Lamed, Gimel. What's he talking about? So there it was a situation of a get that was issued. Subsequent to the issuance and delivery of the get, it was determined that there was a mistake in the way the father of one of the parties was referenced. I think the father of the Baal HaMegaresh doesn't make a difference for our purpose. So they realized after the guy was already delivered that there was a mistake in the way the name was presented. Names are a critical part of how you write a get. But it was impossible to issue another get because in the meantime the husband had become a shota. So he was no longer capable of issuing a get. So the question was, could this get be kasher b'di'evit? So it's a relatively short tshuva. The majority of the tshuva focuses on that question of whether the shem ha'av is ma'akev, and if you make a mistake b'shem ha'av, so that's a whole sugya. There's potentially what to be makel about over there. And then in the end, he throws in as a sniff that there is a tshuva sefet l'avram, in a similar kind of situation where there was a mistake made with the name of a parent of one of the parties in a get, who writes over there, based on a tshuva saradach, that there may be cases where Rashi, that we quoted earlier in the Ach Mummer situation, maybe Rashi would agree that no yibam is necessary for an Ach Mummer. Maybe in a situation where the Ach Mummer is living in Medina Sayam, and there's no possible way that they could get together, he's totally inaccessible. Maybe in that case, Rashi would agree that there's no Zika, that just like the Shita Sagaonim, there's no Zika for an Ach Mummer. And then Rashi Pesach Frank argues there's a sniff, so based on this Chesed Levram, it says it essentially, that maybe you could say the same thing for a Shota, that a person has no interest in living with the Shota, Ein Adam Darim Nachash B'Chvifa Achas, and therefore maybe you can invoke this notion that if a person knew that the spouse would end up being a shota, so they never would have entered into that kedushin adaita d'achi lo niskacha, and therefore maybe the guy was totally unnecessary. So he doesn't say this as the be-all and end-all. It's an added sniff. After he basically already proved that the get is kasher b'di'evet, if you want to throw something else into the mix, so maybe this extension of adaita d'achi lo niskacha. There's a tshuva of Rav Moshe Eben Ezer Kuf Samach Beis, in which he points out that he thinks that's incorrect. This possibility even is a sniff of a daita d'achilo neskatsha for the ach mumer, because the issue by the ach mumer isn't the ability to marry her. Then you could argue that if he's b'medina sayam, so maybe there's no zika like the shita sagonim, but he's going to cause her to violate isurim. So that could be relevant for an ach mumer. That's not relevant for a shota. It's not relevant in our situation. Okay, so basically, so far the Beis Din is putting forth the argument that since there is an opinion that maybe you can invoke a daita d'achilo niskacha, so that makes her into a safek eshes ish, and then we can consider the second part. So they're assuming, based on the Tosus in Ksubis, that the husband does not derive any benefit from remaining married, and therefore you can invoke Tosus' distinction between Mekach u'Memkar and Kiddushin. So that's an assumption that you could argue with. The person, even if he's in a permanent vegetative state, he can't communicate, he doesn't know what's going on, but presumably if he's married, he may be getting better medical care, he may have more people looking out for him. If he dies, he'll have a wife to sit shiva for him. They invoke in the psak over here, the Shita Marshal, Marshal Yam Shalom and Gittin, writes Anosan Einel Lagarsha, if a person decides that he wants to divorce his wife, so then even though he hasn't actually given her a get yet, if then she dies, he doesn't sit shiva for her. So number one is questionable whether we accept the Marshal Allah. And number two, even if we accept the Marshal, so that's not necessarily relevant over here. It's in a case where there's an acrimonious relationship, they're about to get divorced, and she dies, you can understand why maybe there's no avelis. There's no acrimonious relationship in this case. He's in an unfortunate situation. So do you necessarily invoke that there shouldn't be avelis for that reason? And they say, halacha k'divrei mekel v'avil, that doesn't necessarily apply over here. And maybe he is aware of his surroundings. Then Rabbi Bleich points out another ha'ara, that the Tosos in Bava Kamma, source number 3 over here, points out, Tosos there holds, that this whole Adaita D'Achilo Neskatsha is only relevant B'Naflam in Erisin. It's only relevant in a situation where the husband dies B'Ein Erisin L'Nesu'in. But after Nesu'in, you don't say Adaita D'Achilo Neskatsha, because she's already been in a relationship where she derives benefit from the state of being a Nesu'a. She has certain things that she gets from her husband. So you wouldn't say Adaita D'Achilo Neskatsha there. The Tzvat Beis Din argues that maybe Tosin Tzubas argues on that. It's possible, but that's another consideration that's relevant over here. So now let's move on to prong two. Once they establish that because maybe someone could hold in such a situation a daita d'achilo neskatsha, that a person would never enter into marriage knowing that the husband would end up in the state and therefore the marriage was retroactively not chal, so then the second prong is to invoke zikoy to allow you to execute again for the benefit of the husband without his authorization. So min haTorah, a person can divorce his wife bal karcha. Takanos Rabbeinu Gershom says that you can't divorce your wife bal karcha, you need her participation. The Mishnah says in the beginning of Gittin that when it comes to a wife's acceptance of a get, that's not considered an absolute schus. You don't say zachin ladum shalav b'fanav, because a woman has certain privileges when she's married that she loses entitlement to once she becomes divorced. So you can't say that, strictly speaking, you shouldn't be able to say that a person could acquire a get on behalf of a wife without her knowledge, because that's not an absolute schus. However, there are Ramah paskins in two situations that there is a notion of what we call a get zikoy on behalf of a wife. If a wife is a mumeres, she is an apostate, or if she is violating the Isser HSC, she's cohabiting with another man, so then in that situation, we could estimate that it's in her absolute benefit to acquire a get, because otherwise she's living by Isser as an HSC with another man, so then you could acquire a get on her behalf. So that we have a notion of... because then she's going to weiter violate HSC and violate Isserim that are... That are going to be complicated by the fact that she's halachically married. So in that situation, we have a notion of get zikui avor ha'isha. But what they're suggesting over here is something totally different, which is zikui avor habal, which would mean allowing a Beis Din to execute a get on behalf of a husband without his authorization. So that faces a number of hurdles. Number one, you have to determine that giving a get on the behalf of the husband is considered an absolute schus, that there's no benefit for staying married. That we discussed a little bit a few minutes ago, not necessarily the case. Number two, you have to overcome the lack of authorization here because you require your authorization to issue a get. So that's the, if you look in the Gemara and Gittin, Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, source number 15, the Mishnah tells you that you can't have a get written without the explicit authorization of the husband, Ashiyishmu Kala Shiyam L'Sof Riksov L'Edim Chasom. And even if circumstances seem to indicate that the husband really wants it done, you actually need his explicit authorization. That's the whole machlokas we've shown him. Perhaps whether a minui b'chsav would be effective. For further analysis of that, you can look at the tshuvas for Moshe at the end of the packet over here. We don't have time to go into that. But here there's clearly no authorization on behalf of the husband. Number three, we also don't have time to go into, but this famous raid in Choshen Mishpat, this is an Ebenezer Chabura, not a Choshen Mishpat Chabura. Well, do we say Zachin Le'adam Shelo B'fanav, or do we even say Zachin Me'adam? Zachin Le'adam means I can acquire someone on someone's behalf. I can acquire money on your behalf. Zachin Me'adam is something else. I can take something away from you for your benefit, or do something on your behalf for your benefit. That's what's going on over here. To authorize again on behalf of the husband is not Zachin Le'adam. We're not acquiring something on his behalf. We're taking something from him. We're getting that authorization from him, doing something on his behalf. So that's a whole nother parsha. The Ksos says no such thing. Here we have in the Mar Makomos a piece from Reb Chaim Ozer, which he indicates maybe there is such a thing. Let's talk briefly about what precedent there may be in the halachic literature. I'm sorry we're running, but time is short and there's a lot to talk about. What precedent is there in halachic literature for this notion of zikui mei habal? So the Tzvat Beis Din quotes a Merkavas HaMishnah, I think also extra here the Marmar Kamos, a case where a wife was mentally incompetent and the husband was given a heter mei rabbanim to allow him to remarry. Now typically in a case where there's a heter mei rabbanim, where a wife is mentally incompetent, unable to receive a get, we would require that the husband at least leave a get in escrow for her to be entitled to when she becomes if she ever comes out of her state of mental incompetence. In this particular situation, the discussion was whether at a later point a shaliach could deliver a get on behalf of this husband, the get that was set aside, if the husband's not around to authorize the shaliach. So the Merkavas HaMishnah quotes someone who argues that since the husband indicated earlier that he wanted to divorce his wife, he wanted to issue the get, and once he marries another wife, he wouldn't want to violate the Chayim Ben Gershom, so even if he's not around to explicitly authorize the Shaliach to deliver the previously written get on his behalf, we assume that the original Gili Das carries over, and that Gili Das is enough to allow us to authorize the Shaliach. So here we're not talking about authorizing the writing of the get's already been written, a slightly less severe matter, authorizing a shaliach. Now the Beis Din also quotes literature about a case in the 1950s that was discussed in Eretz Yisrael by the Gedolim of the time. There's a tshuva by Rav Herzog, Rav Elyasha, the Minchas Yitzchak, the Har Tzvi. The story was that there was a team from the Beis Din that went to Russia to get authorizations from some husbands to divorce their wives who were in Eretz Yisrael. And the husband met with the Beis Din, he authorized the Sofer, he authorized the Edim, and he authorized the Shaliach to deliver the Gittin. And then, before the Shaliach was able to deliver the Gittin, the Shaliach passed away. So there the question was, could they assume that the husband's authorization of the Shaliach, even though it was only for this particular Shaliach, but he didn't really care who the Shaliach was, he mentioned the name that the Beis Din told him. As far as he's concerned, anyone else could have delivered the get just as well. So there's possibly justification. And many of these Gedolim or Mekel, under the circumstances where there's no other option, to allow the spillover, so to speak, of the authorization of the first shaliach to cover another shaliach. Shlomo Zalman argued against that, Minchas Shlomo Simon Ayin Tes, that maybe the notion of Zechiyah is limited in scope, but we don't have time to get into the particulars right now. You have here as well a letter that Rav Herzog wrote to the Sridei Eish, discussing an unfortunate situation of a Yemenite woman who had made aliyah, whose husbands had converted to Islam and were back in Yemen and were not willing to give gittin. And in that context, he raises the question, maybe there's a notion of zikoi avur habal. They reject that, but they make reference to some of the earlier literature on the topic. There's a story that they make reference to. Also, Igros Moshe, Chelek Aleph Kufiyut Aleph makes reference to it. There's a 80-page chibur called Agunas Yisrael, written by the Kushan Sur Magid, that we don't usually think of in halachic contexts. But there was a case in the very late 1700s of a husband who had disappeared, and then he appeared somewhere again 8 years later. He was the Prussian army was coming through town, and some of the soldiers stayed at this woman's house, and they were talking about this missing husband. Then one of the soldiers saw the husband somewhere else, and he sent a letter, and then the husband came to town, and then he left, and they tried to get him to authorize the get. A lot of it's in Yiddish, so my Yiddish isn't that great, but that's basically the gist of it. And then after some time, the commander of the army, he had defected from the Prussian army to the Greek army. I'm not sure what Greek armies were doing in Poland. So the Greek army commander sent the letter back to the town with his signature on the bottom, authorizing the writing of a get. So there, these are all situations where there's some kind of gilui das. It wasn't an explicit authorization to write the get, but sometime some kind of gilui das that he was interested in writing a get. So there's some literature, still highly questionable whether it would work even there, but there's at least what to talk about in terms of zikoi avur habal. They also quote from Rabbi Yo Kletzkin, the Lubliner Rav, who later moved to Yerushalayim. He has a number of tshuvas in his Sfarim Milui Evan and Dvarim Achadim about similar situations. Again, most of the situations are where there was such a gilui das. He has one case where, as a sniff, he entertains maybe the possibility of zikui avir habal even without a gilui das, where it's betzirah safek, maybe there was kedushei tos, and maybe the guy's dead. And even there, if you look how it's quoted later, at least Rav Herzog quotes those, some reliable testimony that he retracted from that possibility as well later on. But the psak over here basically fails to differentiate between cases where maybe there's what to talk about, or at least there's some precedent in the halachic literature, albeit weak and not endorsed by the general consensus, of a zikoy in a situation where there is an explicit gili das on the part of the husband that he wants to divorce his wife, but that's significantly lacking where there is no such gili das, and they kind of conflate the two. As Rav Herzog notes in his letter there to the Sri Deish, that he's worried even if you could argue that maybe there is grounds for zikui under these very exceptional situations, but if you're going to allow it here, he's worried about the slippery slope. Maybe the people are going to start invoking zikui in a situation where the husband is perfectly competent and just doesn't want to give his wife a get. Look around, you may find people actually saying that now. So that's what he was concerned about. And again, the literature doesn't really support that notion. So bottom line, the attempted psak of the Beis Din and Tzfat, and they acted on this and issued a get under these circumstances, is that the combination of adaita dehachi lo niskatsha, under these circumstances that a woman would never enter into a marriage knowing that her husband would end up being in a permanent vegetative state after 5 years, that at least the fact that someone may hold that creates a suffocatious ish, and then that allows you to invoke this notion of zachin to acquire, to authorize a get on behalf of the husband absent any explicit authorization, with the assumption that it's considered an absolute schus, that the husband loses nothing from the divorce and gains everything. Again, we said those are questionable assumptions as well, even without any explicit tzivi habal. So that was the gist of the Tzfat Pesach.